877-8345.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
The Paracast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/Paracast. So, we have our friend Chris O'Brien here with Gene Steinberg. Chris, you're becoming a famous lecturer again?
I don't know about that.
Okay, you're an infamous lecturer. We're going to have this
infamous
lecture tour that's actually starting this weekend.
Correct. I'm heading out to California. I'll be speaking at the MUFON chapter. It's kind of a combination of three of the Northern California groups. The event will be in San Jose at the it's a Unity Church. But yeah, I'll be speaking there on Sunday, and then
so basically by the time people are hearing this show, you will be lecturing at the same time.
Well, it's actually the Sunday one's at 1 p.m, and then the following Tuesday I'll be in LA, Studio City, and then Wednesday the 18th I'll be down in Orange County in Costa Mesa.
You know, speaking of MUFON, there's a story over at the Sci-Fi Channel's blog called Blastr.com. That's BLASTR.com. And you got to hear this, okay, Chris?
All right.
Okay, Watch the Sky, 2012, already record-breaking year for UFO sightings.
Okay.
By the first week of 2012 alone, UFO sightings were reported in 36 of the 50 states here in the U.S., that according to the Mutual UFO Network.
Wow.
The states left out, by the way, 14 states are left out. So if you lived in these states, you didn't have a UFO during the first part of 2012. Alaska, Arkansas, Delaware, Hawaii, Maine, Minnesota, Montana, Nebraska, North Dakota, Rhode Island, South Dakota, Washington, Wisconsin, and Wyoming. Sorry, folks, no UFOs. You were left out this time. But that could change later.
Sounds like most of the M's and a few of the N states were devoid of activity. But you and I both know, Gene, that there were probably events that just didn't get reported.
That's always true. You know, and there's also this publicity flap where if one sighting gets some kind of prominence, then suddenly everybody reports their sightings. Now, specifically, in January of 2011, MUFON got 500 reports for the entire month.
Wow.
They got 233 the first week of 2012, January. They got 6,000 reports last year, and they could get a lot more this year. So this is interesting, really interesting. I hope it's not just to sell MUFON memberships.
Let's hope the good ones aren't being filtered off to our friendly Nevada billionaire.
Yeah, what is their status with Bigelow? Is that deal gone and forgotten?
Officially, I think it is, but there is still some question in some people's minds that the relationship still is intact, but very low-key.
Well, so far, at least, if you look at the MUFON Journal, I know you don't get a copy, but if you look at the MUFON Journal, you do see a lot of sighting reports, so it's not as if this stuff is being kept under the radar.
Okay. I wish we had more radar on it. Then maybe we'd get better hard data.
That's true. I mean, a lot of these sightings are just people seeing lights in the sky. But, you know, there are a lot of cases there. And it's interesting that people are suddenly looking to the skies and finding strange things happening.
Yeah, but like our guest today. Oh, my goodness. Talk about a guy that has been there and done that. He's been looking to the sky since the early 50s. He's one of the last of the original old guard of field investigators. And boy, are we, I guess, blessed and graced to have Mr. Ray Stanford as our guest here at the Paracast for his first real return engagement.
Now, it's interesting here, when we put up our question bank thread or the place in our forums where you can ask questions of guests, we had quite a bit of response. In fact, looking at the responses we got to the impending arrival of Ray Stanford, I would think we could probably just ask the questions and sit back and listen.
Well, it did devolve into some conversations, but yeah, there are some really good questions there. And Ray was gracious enough to provide me with some very, very compelling images of these discoidal artifacts that may be up to 1,750 years old that have been found in the Mississippian culture states of Ohio, Illinois, Indiana. And Ray has a very intriguing theory that we're going to talk about today on the Paracast concerning these objects and their obvious look of you know, high-tech flying saucers. I think this is really going to be interesting. He's done quite a bit of work over the years in researching these very enigmatic artifacts and has one of the largest collections of them. In fact, he just got his latest addition to the collection yesterday, which is just a breathtaking example of artistry.
You know, I'm looking at the photos at forum.theparacast.com, and it's in the question bank and the thread called Ray Stanford Returns to the Paracast. I'm looking at some of these photos. Now, in the past, in one of the interviews we had, someone was suggesting that some of these anomalous objects from the past, well, it's just basically toys for kids. But I'll tell you, I'm looking at the stuff, these pictures that he has assembled here of these objects, and they sure don't look like toys to me.
Yeah, they look like miniature versions of what people have been reporting for, at least in the modern age of ufology, you know, thousands of reports of objects that look almost identical or at the very least similar. But one thing that's very interesting is how these objects seem to be more detailed and more kind of modern looking the older they are. And as they devolve through the years, they actually, as Ray will tell us, turned into a game called Chunky, which then possibly was where we get the game bowling from.
Would you be specific about what you're talking about? Because those of us who have no idea what this game is, would you?
Well, we'll let Ray kind of give us his research on this. And like I said, he has worked for many years assembling these objects in his collection, and he's been in touch with some of the folks that have similar collections. And this is really going to be an interesting show.
It's going to be a fascinating show. It's going to come up. Before we basically go to Ray Stanford and talk to him further about his research and get to your questions, I want to mention one more thing from another UFO field old-timer named Jim Mosley. Current issue of Saucer Smear. That's this monthly newsletter he sends out for a love offering. Let me give you the address for it. Box 1709, Key West, Florida, 33041. He has a little article here about something called the Roswell Dream Team. Okay?
Apparently, I'm not sure if I can handle this. It might be too full of Schmidt.
Haven't I heard that one before? Okay. Just as you said, Dr. Colonel Kevin Randall, Don Schmidt, Tom Carey have organized this group. But it's kind of interesting because I didn't think that Randall and Schmidt and Carey got along, but I guess they basically have buried the hatchet. They're going to evaluate all over again the Roswell evidence. And supposedly, according to Mosley, Anthony Brigalia has been recruited, conscripted, whatever, into this group.
Well, duck and cover.
And he's, you know, an unusual character. We might get him on the Paracast sometime.
He's a good researcher, but I question some of his conclusions.
Well, he concludes, for example, that the Sicara, New Mexico case involving the late Lonnie Zamora, that was a hoax perpetrated by college students with the help of a professor, I guess.
Right. And Ray Stanford, who investigated the case with Alan Hynek, was quite adamant that doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well, whatever. So we have Brigalia, Carey, Schmidt, Randall. Sounds like the Marx Brothers personified here. Assembling to, as Jim says, re-evaluate all the evidence in this never-ending case.
Well, now, hopefully this will be Roswell case closed finito.
Or Roswell case closed episode 4,970 on the Paracast. We will discuss that in the future, maybe. We have Ray Stanford with some fascinating new information to present, possibly about UFOs in ancient times. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
As you know, the PowerCast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service, such as Steve Jobs, the best-selling authorized biography from Walter Isaacson. For that free audiobook, go to audiblepodcast.com/PowerCast. That's audiblepodcast.com/PowerCast. So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
Hi, Jason Lewis here. Anybody who's been listening to my program knows how shaky the U.S. economy is right now. Will we have a V-shaped recovery, or will it be a W-shaped one where the nation slips back into recession? Of course, if you think that Washington can spend or inflate its way out of a downturn, you've got nothing to worry about. But as you know, I have my doubts. So let me tell you about gold. Now, as my friend Ted Anderson from Midas Resources likes to say, gold, like all commodity markets, fluctuates in price, and you could lose money. But it has never been worth zero. Give it some thought, and if you're interested in converting your IRA to gold, or would like to actually have it in your possession, call Midas Resources today at 1-800-686-2237. The U.S. dollar was once backed by gold, but has since lost 90% of its value. And if things don't change, I'm afraid the trend will continue. Call Midas Resources today at 1-800-686-2237 for gold and tell them Jason Lewis sent you.
Did you know nuclear radiation is still spewing out of the melted down reactors in Fukushima, Japan, and making its way across the entire U.S. continent, contaminating the air, water, and food? Dangerously high levels of radiation are a reality here. As a result, radiation poisoning is a distinct possibility for anyone living in the U.S. unless you do something to protect yourself. How? With liquid zeolite from RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Without a doubt, liquid zeolite is by far the best product to remove radiation from your body. It safely removes toxins and heavy metals, boosts energy levels, and promotes a strong immune system. Liquid zeolite is so powerful it was used to clean up contamination in Chernobyl, yet so gentle you won't even know you're taking it. Liquid zeolite comes with a money-back guarantee, but is only available at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Learn how to get free bottles of liquid zeolite by calling 800-880-9976. That's 800-880-9976. Or go to RestoreYourHealthNow.com. That's RestoreYourHealthNow.com.
If you don't want to be unprepared, BePrepared.com. BePrepared.com is the official site of Emergency Essentials, the 24-year leader in emergency preparedness. Why do they lead? Because of best value, best selection, and their low price guarantee. Take advantage of BePrepared.com's inventory reduction sale going on right now. Save up to 43% on food storage and emergency supplies. Up to 43%. For example, be prepared with freeze-dried peaches and strawberries, freeze-dried roast beef, 182-piece first aid kits, 9-meal MRE kits, a waterproof multifunction emergency LED flashlight for only $3.99, and much more. BePrepared.com. All supplies last. But hurry, sale ends when inventory's gone. Call 800-999-1863. That's 800-999-1863. Or online at BePrepared.com. BePrepared.com. Best value, best selection, and low price guarantee. The choice is clear. Be unprepared or BePrepared.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
With Gene and Chris in the PowerCast, we welcome back Ray Stanford. And he's been a longtime friend of our co-host Chris O'Brien. And therefore, Chris has gracefully volunteered to pick up on this discussion and take us into some very fascinating areas we haven't covered fully on the PowerCast before. Chris?
Yeah, Ray, well, first of all, welcome back to the program, and congratulations on your recent inclusion into the Smithsonian Natural History Museum for your species of nodosaur that you discovered, the cast, that's now on permanent display at the Smithsonian. We haven't had a chance on the show to really talk about your paleontology work and your dinosaur track work, but maybe we could save that for another show. But I just wanted to remind our listeners that Ray is a longtime friend and confidant and mentor to me, and it's a real pleasure to have you back on the show, Ray.
Well, thanks, Chris. It's really fun to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be good. One of the things that I want to thank you also for is being gracious enough to send along some just very, very interesting compilations of images from these very, very enigmatic artifacts that you have been interested in for many years. You do have a large collection of them. And I think we're going to talk, first of all, today about these objects. And then at the end of the show, which is going to be a real treat, I think, for our Paracast audience, we're going to be getting your insight into your years of analytical work with UFO films and photographs. Why don't you first start off by telling us about how you first became aware of these enigmatic artifacts from the Mississippian and Fort Ancient cultures here in America, and give us a little background on how you started your collection and some of the more interesting facts about the actual earliest objects that we know of.
Actually, I guess I was drawn into the artifacts, the archaeology, as a kid when my father worked in the oil fields in South Texas and would bring home lithic artifacts, Indian areas, people would call them, from the fields. And, of course, over the years, I got more and more fascinated and began to collect first artifacts from North America and then eventually South and Central America and also all over the world. But it was not until about 23, 24 years ago that I became interested in what are called discoidals by the, I prefer just the word discoid, but the collectors of artifacts call them discoidals. These are the pieces that were definitely used in the game called Chunky that was being used when the white man arrived in North America and encountered the Indians of the Mississippian culture that were doing this. Now, in that interest, in the line of that interest, I had been following Indian artifact auctions, and I received a catalog back about 23 years ago in which it showed pictures of each of the artifacts to be auctioned. And one of them, when I saw it, having been into UFOs very actively since age 15, I really did a double take. Here was a photograph of something that looked absolutely like the popular concept of a UFO, or at least from what I knew about it. The thing had a dome, and it had spots around the rim, such as people had seen glowing or emitting light around the rim of reported so-called UFOs. And oh my gosh, that thing's going up at auction. Despite being an Indian artifact collector, being interested in UFOs makes that even more desirable. So I called the auctioneer and I said, gee, can I buy this before the auction? He said, no, it's in the catalog. We can't do that. But he said, you know, if you're serious, he said, I've got another one. In fact, it's right here in my desk drawer. He said, these things came in. He said, he had been in the field for years. He said, I hadn't seen, of course, the game discards, but these, he said, I've never seen anything like them. And, he said, well, this one is just as good. And it's just a little larger than the one in the auction. And, it's out of the same old collection from Western Illinois, the Piedra collection. And I said, how old is that collection? And he said, well, Piedra was collecting in at the end of the 19th century and into the early 20th century. And I said, and these definitely came out of his collection. He said, there's no doubt his sticker is on one of them. And we know that that's where it came from, the earliest source we have on these discs.
Ray, there's a verifiable evidence chain on where these objects came from, where they were found.
Yes.
So there's a way for you to go back and ascertain the history of these objects as from discovery until the present, correct?
That's right. You know, the auctioneer said, well, Mr. Stanford, I don't know what you think of these or why you're interested in this particular type, except that they're odd. But he said, I had a friend in here yesterday, and he said, and I wanted to shock him. I pulled this thing out of my desk drawer, just set it on the desk without a word. And he said, damn, that's a flying saucer. And I said, well, what do you want for it? He told me what he wanted for it, and I sent him a check and got it. And that was how I started collecting discards, beginning with the ones that happened to be the rarest and thus the most expensive and apparently are the oldest.
Why don't you go ahead and explain to our audience the game Chunky that the early explorers and settlers, when they came to this to the New World, the Indians had already developed this particular game. Why don't you go ahead and describe the game for us and then dovetail that into the actual kind of de-evolution of these objects from the oldest ones to the ones that were around when Anglos first appeared?
Okay. When the white man came, this was the equivalent of football in North America to the Indians. That was all over the Midwest and down complete, all of our south down into even Florida. And the way it was described, and this can be found in the literature that was written soon after the white man came, and there is a carving from the Caddoan culture of the southern United States that shows a late phase Chunky player. And what he's doing, he's down on his knees, and he is rolling with his right hand an underhand roll of the discard. But according to the white persons writing the accounts, the game was very boring to them. The Indians were wild about it. What happens is the disc is rolled. I don't remember which happens. There is a thing that's shaped like a long spear, a smooth, straight spear with some of the accounts say pointed ends, that would be a thrown. Well, the idea was when this object, this elongated thing that reminds me of the shape of a mothership, as we have seen and filmed them many times, and others have seen them, and a few have filmed them, reminded me of the mothership. Well, this disc is supposed to roll along and end up as near as possible to where the so-called mothership has de facto landed on the ground. There was various people, of course, would be rolling the disc. The idea was that the one got the point for that section of the game, if their disc was nearest to what I will call henceforward the mothership, that's in quotes, because we don't know what it really represented. It's just what to me it looks like. And I kind of suspicion, because of these early discs that the people that have gone to the Paracast website have seen, because of their resemblance to what we would call shuttle discoid UFOs, that what happened was that early on, these were magical objects.
I'll tell you why it's so magical. We've got to stop for this kind of magic. We're talking to Ray Stanford with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
When it comes to running a successful business, there are many things you have to get right. But one thing is often overlooked, and that's protecting the data that powers your business. Computers, servers, external hard drives, and even tape backups are vulnerable to failure. In the U.S. alone, over 140,000 hard drives fail each and every week. According to one study, only 7% of companies that lose their data centers for 10 days or more survive beyond the year. So I want to tell you about our friends at Mosey, the most trusted name in online backup. Give our friends at Mosey a call. They've been doing this for a long time and run the most secure, most trusted online backup service. Right now, you could save 15% by using the promo code PODCAST15. That's PODCAST15. Call 877-669-9776. That's 877-669-9776. Or visit MoseyPro.com. That's MozyPro.com.
That's what it sounds like when a burglar kicks in the door of a dark house that looks like no one is home. Don't let your home be the next target. Make it look like someone is home watching television with Fake TV. Fake TV is a small electronic device that makes the same light as a real television, so from outside it looks like someone is home watching TV. Fake TV plugs in just like a lamp on a timer, but is far more convincing to burglars. Fake TV deters burglars, costs far less than an alarm, and is highly recommended by numerous police departments. Use it anytime you're away from home, To order your fake TV for only $34.95, go to faketv.com or call 1-877-5-FAKE-TV. Each additional fake TV is only $29.95, so get one for you and one for a loved one for safety, security, and peace of mind for both of you. Call 877-5-FAKE-TV or go to faketv.com. FakeTV.com, the burglar deterrent.
That's the sound of your door being kicked in by an intruder with a single kick. That's the sound of the same door now protected by the Door Sentinel at MySafeDoor.com. Go to MySafeDoor.com right now and watch the amazing video. At MySafeDoor.com, you'll learn how to turn your home into a fortress with the Door Sentinel. 16 kicks later, and the Door Sentinel is still holding strong. MySafeDoor.com. That's MySafeDoor.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
George Washington said, "Government is not reason, it is not eloquence, it is force, like fire. It is a dangerous servant and a fearful master." America's government is no longer the servant of the people and the protector of our liberty, but has become that fearful master. We the people must understand the nature of this government gone awry if we are to be successful in saving our country. America is being deliberately destroyed by a cabal of international gangsters so that she can be forced into subjugation to a one-world government. The God-given, unalienable rights of the Declaration of Independence are in jeopardy. We must not let them be stolen by ambitious and evil men. Utopia Silver Supplements believes it is our God-given right to make our own health care decisions however we deem best. If we can help you with your supplement needs and better health, then help us win this health freedom battle. Visit us today at utopiasilver.com. That's UTOPIASilver.com. Or call 888-213-4338. Again, 888-213-4338.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
With Gene and Chris and Ray Stanford with some magical, mysterious information to present to you about ancient artifacts. Ray?
Okay, well, let me mention that the Mississippian culture goes back about as far as 1,000 years from the present time. Some of the discs, including the one that I show on the Paracast website with the seeming ladder images on either side, that is earlier. That is from the Fort Anxion culture of Ohio. And the Fort Anxion culture goes back about 1,750 years before the present time. Then at about the end of where we see the end of the Fort Anxion material, we begin to see the Mississippian, and it proliferate all up and down the Mississippi Valley. What I'm saying is that we do have disc-like images, even with seeming ladders suggesting a way in and out of an object, maybe hovering or supported by the ground in some way. We have these from way back in the Fort Anxion culture, before the Mississippian culture. Then in the Mississippian culture, the seeming earliest of these discs, based on their rarity and the proliferation that came later with modification across time of the disc, are these that you see that look just like our concept of shuttle-shaped like disc with domes.
Let me ask you a fast question, sure. Ray, not to interrupt, yes, but this is one concern expressed by the critics when they see these artifacts. They say, you know what, they're just toys. Don't take them seriously. That's their blanket condemnation of at least some of these things.
Okay, well, I wouldn't think that any person in the ancient culture, including the Mississippian culture, I mean, we didn't have all the spare time to watch TV and play around that we do now. If you know how hard hematite is and how hard it is to work, there are hundreds of hours of work that went into these items. I don't think hundreds of hours were spent by any Mississippian or Fort Anxion person in order to make a toy, a mere toy. Now, if you consider the chunky is using the game a toy, fine. Maybe football is our, or soccer is our toy, or baseball, basketball is our toy game today. That's fine. It doesn't make any difference what you call it. It doesn't remove the fact that these objects exist and resemble the earliest phase, resemble nothing we know. The late phase, backfill for rolling. Some of them have kind of rounded edge, but the other have an edge shaped much like a cork tire. It's possible that the first effigies were in fact effigies of things seen in the sky or even closer down to the ground, that they were replicated as the Indians were inclined to do as magical objects. We have the Hopi that have their concept of the Kachinas, when they made the Kachina dolls as a magical reference to our way of being present with the Kachinas. Likewise, this could have been the way of the Mississippian culture. I will mention one other interesting thing. Among the Mississippians, there was the legend a similar legend up back among the Hopi was of what they call spider grandmother Gongeng Savuti. There was a similar legend among the Mississippians that this creature represented inside of, for example, a stone or shell disc. This spider had populated the sky with the Milky Way. But if we take the spider grandmother legend, look at it closely, we might wonder if some of this so-called angel's hair that has been apparently well documented in a few cases, dropped out of so-called UFOs, might have been, in fact, the origin of the cosmic or sky moving cosmic grandmother, Gongeng Savuti.
I'd forgotten that you had come up with that particular correlation. That kind of makes sense to me. Of course, angel hair is very difficult to obtain because it does tend to disappear soon after it hits the ground and even before it hits the ground. So, yeah, that would make sense. Spider Woman, obviously, you could make the leap that there is some connection, I guess, in terms of their observations of potential angel hair. I could see why why you would make that jump.
You know, before we should tell our listeners who aren't familiar with the concept of angel hair. We heard a lot of that in the early days of modern UFO research. Chris, give us an angel hair Reader's Digest summary, please.
Well, angel hair is material that has been seen coming out of UFOs after a flyover or they hover. In my particular research, I've only had one case that this was supposedly seen, and it was in Taos in the I think mid-70s, where some of this material had drifted down onto parked cars, and some was collected. I don't recall. I think there may have been testing done. But, Ray, perhaps you could fill us in a little bit on this in terms of the composition of this material and your knowledge about angel hair.
Well, off the top of my head, I can't recall chemical analysis might have been done. It's difficult because when this material falls, a big strand of it about 8 feet long and several inches across at the thickest places fell down one time in Corpus Christi, fell down right in front of me, and I grabbed it. But in a few seconds, it had seemingly effervesced into the atmosphere. It was gone. The heat of my body or electrical charge in my body or something caused it to break up. Perhaps it's been theorized that these objects I'm sure they do, in fact, from my own work, have a magnetic field and plasma operative in that field, being moved by that field for certain types of propulsion and maneuvering effects. If that's the case, I think it's conceivable that they may actually generate this externally by electrifying certain compounds that will line up and form long-strand polymers in the atmosphere that all the same are fairly unstable, and when body heat contacts them, the components of the polymer simply break off and vaporize.
Well, let's get back to Spider Woman and a correlation between the Hopi and the Mississippi Valley cultures. Where do we know that the game Chunky, how far can we actually trace the game Chunky back based on archaeological evidence?
Well, of course, we know that the more recent types are accessible. Many of them have been found in Illinois in the region of Cahokia, where the largest of the Indian mounds in North America is located there still today. But there's no direct evidence, contrary to what one archaeologist published recently in Archaeology Magazine, there's no direct evidence that absolutely the game originated at Cahokia. I do know that as far as the UFO-looking ones that are probably the earliest. They seem to have originated in somewhere in western Illinois, but not far enough south to be Cahokia. And then we see, as we look for the modifications of that farm are found, they begin to take off the dome or domes, if there's one at the top and bottom, and they begin to remove the dots, which one can see in those images I sent, around the edge, and then they made them broader and broader and more curved rim. As we look at the map of distribution of these finds, we see that the earliest ones, the UFO-like ones, are right around the central part of western Illinois, and then they seem to migrate out, even as the game did. You see, the game became, as the Cahokian culture people really took over and became a very powerful and widespread empire, let's call it. The game spread. In fact, the article in Archaeology Magazine within the last year or so suggested that this may have been part of the way that the Cahokians did take over other territory. They got them involved with the game and in competitions, and the people began to know each other, and eventually there came a spread not only of the culture of the game, but the culture of Cahokia per se. But
maybe they were gamblers. Maybe they were putting up their mound against your mound.
Well, indeed they were. The white man, as I said, Chris, the white man found this game quite boring, but the Indians would play it rounds of it all day long, and they would, if the game players weren't working up a sweat, the people watching were, because they were going crazy betting. I mean, the Indians were betting. It is said that they would bet everything they owned down to their loincloth, and that as to the results of the game, some people supposedly, it is rumored, even bet their lives on the outcome. So we can't.
Well, I can hear it now. I can hear some lady in a Indian wiki up or a wigwam or a teepee saying, "Swift deer, you've been out there all day with those guys. You get in here right now and start skinning this deer."
Yep. Well, gambling never changes, I guess, in our society. Maybe we do need E.T. to take care of us. But seriously, Ray Stanford joins us. You're with Gene. You're with Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Are you ready to order the official Paracast t-shirt? You asked, we answered. We're now taking orders for the official Paracast t-shirt. It comes in white, 100% cotton. The front of it features the same logo that we have on our community forums. On the back it says, "Separating signal from noise." To order the official Paracast t-shirt, here's all you have to do. Visit our new online store at store.theparacast.com. One more time, that's store.theparacast.com. You can use a major credit card to place your order for the official Paracast t-shirt. Hey, neighbors, we have one more thing to talk about, and that's more merchandise at the official Paracast store. We have hats, we have jackets, we even have a flip video camcorder customized with the Paracast logo at the official Paracast store. It's all now available at the official Paracast store, store.theparacast.com.
Did you know that how well your brain works is directly dependent upon how well your gut works? Did you know that an inflamed or compromised digestive system directly contributes to poor focus, depression, irritability, attention deficit, and hyperactivity? By eliminating the inflammation in your intestines and by having good bacteria populations, you may enjoy better brain function. The most important protein your body needs to keep inflammation down is glutathione. The number one food to support a dramatic increase in glutathione production is undamaged whey protein from grass-fed cows. Virtually all whey proteins are damaged by heat, filtration, and chemicals, except one. One World Whey is the most life-giving whey protein on the market. It is changing the lives of its users in very positive ways. One World Whey may act as one of the most important health foods to support your and your child's optimal brain function. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworldwhey.com.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light system today, complete with two Black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Don't answer it.
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
Hi, this is Clifford Cliff, International Director for the Mutual UFO Network. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We're back on the Paracast with Gene and Chris, exploring the past, maybe gambling in ancient times, with Ray Stanford. This is just really fascinating, taking us to areas we haven't covered in previous episodes. Chris, you want to move the questions forward?
Yeah. Ray, you mentioned to me last week when we first kind of had the idea of addressing this subject on the Paracast that you saw an article at UFO Iconoclast online. I think a Rich Reynolds, I'm not sure if Rich was the one that wrote it, but why don't you describe your feelings of his article stating that we have no direct evidence that ancient cultures had any sort of knowledge about UFOs in
well,
their
my reaction, part. My reaction to that article, which was signed RR, which I would presume is Rich Reynolds, my reaction to it was that it was as laughable as his totally unfounded claim that what landed at Socorro and took off silently after a roar to get 20 feet above the ground and became hypersonic in very short time was a Hughes Black Project research craft. It's totally unfounded, and his claim that we have no evidence from ancient cultures that there was any interface with alien cultures. We have to keep in mind that the figured speech we use, as people that believe in this almost religiously will insist, well, as extraterrestrial visitors, well, they didn't have those terms. They had to use other terms for whatever they, however they encountered it. I think some pretty good terms were used, a wheel within a wheel, a pillar of fire. By the way, the Greeks, someone asked about the Greek, I think it was the Poltergeist, one of your New York members asked about, did these look like the ones the Greeks used? And I did some research on that, and indeed they do, except speaking generally, the ones the Greeks threw were narrower. They were flatter. The disc was flatter. They had rather sharp edges and were flatter. Well, of course, the first Mississippian disc have sharp edges and are flatter than the later ones. I mean, whatever the Greeks meant by this, let us consider its possibility. The Greeks had a lot of talk about gods, and when we see the person throwing this disc, is it actually a terrestrial game devised after an idea that some cosmic god was throwing discoidal things that they were seeing in the sky? I don't have literature evidence of that that I can quote, but I think it's not a totally unreasonable speculation. And Chris, regarding questions, in fact, Poterverse wrote in some very good ones. Could I address some of these?
Let's go to the question bank here. Do you have them in front of you?
I've got them up right in front of me. Uh-huh. And
This will be a Paracast first. Our guest asking the questions, being up to speed enough to be online and ask the question. So ask and answer, Ray.
Okay. I answered his first one about the Greek, and he said, if not, do you see a connection to the he says, really just subjective question mark observation that the American continent seems somewhat popular with UFOs. Well, I would say that apparently all continents seem somewhat popular with UFOs. I don't think that the demographics of UFO reports would justify that America is more visited than other places. We even have, considering the very few people that are down in Antarctica, we have some wonderful reports from very scientific and in other cases military sources down in Antarctica. So I think they're generally all over. I don't think it would have anything to do with America being unique. His third question was, are there any Native American stories or legends about the disc guards, how they originated, especially why they were shaped like this? And he says, with the dome and the pearls. Keep in mind, Mississippians had no written language. And what they had, of course, was simply legends passed down by word of mouth. And we don't know. I was thinking about this question this morning, and it occurred to me that it's possible. You know, when the white man came, they watched the Indian do this, and they thought, well, just a game. I don't think there's no written account that they questioned the Indians about an origin of it. But if they had, and if, keep in mind, the Mississippian culture began as much as about 1,000 years ago. We can't be sure that the actual original source of the disc and how it changed into a very popular game, extremely popular before the white man came, would have been, the original ideas would have been passed forward as to what they represented. They may well have been, but it might be as difficult for an Indian to want to talk to a white man about the sacred origins of a game as it might be for a Roman Catholic priest to want to administer communion to someone who had not taken the catechism. It may have been verboten. Now, he asked another good one. He says, do you find any traditions that talked about Chenki and his origin? No, that's basically the same question that I answered. No, they don't. Now, he wanted to know, does the use of materials like magnetite and pearls and at least some of these artifacts imply they might have been used as magical or sacred? Well, I think indeed they do. He added, are that they were made in the image of something that was perceived as being magical. Certainly, even by our technological and aircraft standards today, things that are attributed or described in UFO cases appear magical, even to us. So certainly they would have to them then. And if indeed these were effigies made for magical purposes of what they saw, then I think that's not an unreasonable speculation, and it is my speculation about this. He said, did I ever watch the game of Chenki? My answer to that is not unless I was an Indian of the Mississippian culture in a past life. But it ended with the white man. They wanted more exciting games. The white man did pick up one of the Indian games, but it was not this one. He asked, though, are the disc guards thrown or spun through the air, or are they rolled on the ground? When the white man came, they were being rolled on the ground, and the evidence is going back and looking at the different discs suggests that they've been rolled on the ground for a long time. Whether the first ones were thrown or not, all I can say is that my two from the Piedrit collection, that old collection, have no dents around the edge to suggest they were either thrown or rolled. But when we get to the bigger one from found just outside of Miami, Illinois, in central Illinois, we do see quite a bit of ancient edge damage, and this suggests that they were either throwing it or rolling on the ground. There might have been some, you know, real hard with some rocks or something in it. But later on, as they rounded the edge more and made it, in fact, flatter, of course, there would be less tendency to get any damage as it was rolled along the ground because you're distributing the contact with hard surface areas across a wider area. Now, there was one other he said.
Before we get too far away from the question about hematite, one thing that we haven't really addressed yet is the actual composition of the material that that these objects, they've been found made out of. And the earlier ones are made out of hematite, and you have a theory about that you told me.
I don't know which theory you're referring to. I have several theories. Are you talking about?
I remember you sent me a map of a meteorite fall in the area where these things were first found.
Okay. This is what it was. I sent Chris a map that showed the locations of finds of the UFO-like disc and the Salt River disc, which are the subsequent derivation therefrom, I believe. And it also showed, I pointed out, two locations of ancient impact structures. Now, these were far before the times of the Indians, And in Illinois, there was also, of course, a spectacular one that's right adjacent to the northeast and north of the famous Serpent Mound in Ohio. And I was merely speculating and asking whether perhaps in an early geological survey of terrestrial things that these UFOs might have been seen by the Indians, because it's if they were doing a gravitational survey of the surface of the map, for example, and in some cases even a magnetic survey, they would quickly pick up anomalies associated with the impact structures. That's been one of my areas of study is meteorites and impact effects and structures. And if they were studying that, then, of course, the Indians might have seen them doing so. But that's pure speculation. We don't know what they actually were doing here. I just thought it was interesting that there's such a concentration, in fact, of others that I haven't mentioned, of impact structures. If you look at the map of structures in the United States, the greatest majority of them is centered in the regions where the Mississippian and the Fort Anson cultures were located.
Chris?
The early disks are made of hematite, but obviously they have some magnetite because they have various degrees of magnetism, some of it fairly strong. Every one of the hematite discoids I've collected have that magnetic property. People wonder, well, did the Indians, if they somehow knew that the UFOs were magnetic, did they deliberately make these out of a magnetic material? I don't think so. I think it'd be more likely that they thought the hematite, particularly the more metallic looking varieties of hematite, looked like what they saw on or adjacent to the surface of the UFOs. I think that's more reasonable than presuming that they made them out of that because they thought the objects were magnetic.
If you have a comment or a question about the Paracast, why don't you send us a note, news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com, or give us a tweet at the Paracast on Twitter, at the Paracast. We have Ray Stanford. You're talking to Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, Ted Anderson announcing a great way to listen to radio on the telephone. By calling 760-569-7700, you'll be hearing GCNLive.com programs in seconds. Come to GCNLive.com, find your favorite host's dedicated phone number, and hear them 24/7. You heard me right, every show has a dedicated phone number. Stop by GCNLive.com and bookmark their number today. And again, that's 760-569-7700.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.